الشمس والقمر بحسبان. The sun and the moon follow courses exactly computed. Now we understand the word computed now. A computer is so common, I think everybody understands the word computer, computed. But I remember about maybe 30 or 40 years ago reading this, and I had to stop. I had to stop because I know many in the audience didn't understand what computed means, because I didn't either until I ran into it and learned what it meant. So I would have to explain computed, you know. But we don't know now because, you know, computer is another tabulator, right? It does much more than that, but that's one of its functions. The sun and the moon follow courses exactly computed. And it goes on to mention many, many other things that we see and marvel at in Allah's creation. And some things that many of us take for granted in his creation. It moves from addressing the operations that are in the sky, the heavens, but before doing that, it reminds us of the obligation to establish justice by others. Justice, balance, and justice. It comes down to the earth. The focus comes down to the earth and brings our attention to the great, wonderful bounties that we find on the earth. Earth with plenty herbage, herbs, plants that are useful to man in so many ways, giving him fruits and spices and so many, serving him in so many ways, serving his needs in so many ways. And it also brings our attention to the waters, the seas, the bounties in the seas, the beautiful things that are formed in the seas for the fish that we eat, the food that we eat, but also beautiful things that come from fish life or sea life that we use as jewelry, and coral, and all those nice things. We can make nice utensils and vases, whatever, and jewelry and everything from it. And also the sea supports our cargo and support us and carry us across the sea. And what is being carried across the sea? On that surface of water that Allah has made to support tons and tons and tons within a vessel. The water itself created by God. The water is filled with useful things for man and beautiful things for man. Then the ship that he makes that sails the water, he made it from materials provided by Allah. And he himself riding in the ship, he was created by Allah, and all of his abilities and everything, his talents and everything, was given to him by the Creator. And whatever cargo was in there, raw or manufactured, came to him from the Creator. So I'm just summing this up and kind of briefly commenting so we can see the point. The point is, Allah has been most kind to his creatures, most kind to his creatures. And we are born with it in our nature to know that, whether it's Allah, whether we call it Allah, whether we even know the name, but we are born with the nature to know that kindness is in the world for us. The baby hollers and screams coming into the world most of the time, but it's not because it is afraid of what's out here in the world. It's because it's suffering pain. The medical profession has described the pressure that's put on the baby's, the infant's head, skull, when it's being drawn through the womb. It's a great pressure and a lot of pain. I guess that's the way Allah tells them, say, well, you think this is bad? Wait till you run into some of those relatives of yours. So I guess Allah is conditioning, getting them ready so he can survive worse things that's coming. Well, anyway, it's there. But once he's out, he's just a contented. Once he touches his mother, you know, and he feels her and the warmth from her, and he's just as contented. Looked like he knew he was going to be put in good circumstances. You know, just like nature just made him know, or her know, that the child was going to be put into good circumstances. So the baby is born with the nature to have faith and trust in something of the world that's going to take care of it, be kind to it, and everything, right? That's the mercy of Allah. That's the grace of Allah. That's the goodness of Allah. He has done so much good for man, woman. Now, when you say man, we mean man and woman. He's done so much good for man down through the ages, down through the generations, that this has been clocked into our genetic makeup. It's in our genetic makeup. It's in our genes. It's in our blood. It's in our bones to expect goodness and to have faith in goodness, to trust goodness. I want to come back to the first verses now, because, you know, these first verses, they're different. We want to see the uniqueness of this religion. We want to see this religion's distinction from other religions. So we have to go back to the first verses. Most revelation before the prophet is the last prophet. You see, he's the last prophet. So the last completes. And what's given in the finish in man's growth process should be better in degrees. It should be more progress. It should be higher in man's, it should be higher in man's eye when he looks at it to evaluate it. The last should be higher, because it's given to him according to his developmental needs. That's how Allah has served us. He created us and he has given to us according to our developmental needs. So that is given lastly for the final maturity in man, for the final growth in man, it must also be more valuable and more important. For man, it must also be higher in man's reach when he's aspiring for something. It must be higher, and it is. So instead of just dwelling on these things that man behold in the physical environment, because that's our scripture before this scripture, it mostly dwell on the stars, the heavenly bodies, you know, the wonders of the heavens and that, and the beauty of God's creation, that, but never address the developmental line in a human being. Look, the intellect of man, very first, says, he who has taught the Quran, the beneficent God who has taught the Quran. So we see, understand the beneficence of God, the kind, the giving and kindness of God and his mercy, great mercy. When we recognize that God has served the intellect of man. God has served the intellect of man. Now, you know, many of us, we forget that man's value in the world is really the result of the growth of his intellect more than anything else. The growth of his intellect. Now, we know the heart is very important. The heart is a key to the growth of the intellect. It is a key, very important key, to the growth of the human intellect. But we know, dear people, from the study of the history of man, his life, his growth and development, that the growth of his intellect really explains the ability, man's ability to achieve great wonders in the world. You can have the best people in heart, but if they don't have no schooling or no intelligence, it's just like being in a rabbit field. Rabbits are sweet and nice too, you know, beautiful little sweet and nice things. The intellect is what establishes man as the crown in the kingdom of creatures. He's the crown. He crowns the kingdom of creatures, huh? It is his intellect. And that is addressed first in the Quran, after the verse saying Ar-Rahman. Ar-Rahman is a verse to itself. Isn't that something? The one word, the name of God, forms one verse to itself. Ar-Rahman. And you stop. You can stop right there. Ar-Rahman. Stop. One verse. The beneficent, the merciful, the beneficent God. Ar-Rahman. Complete verse within itself. How is this a complete verse within itself? How is this a complete thought, a complete line of reasoning, a complete thought, a complete message to a man's intellect, to his heart and mind in itself? Just the one word, Ar-Rahman. And not even Allah. Is there any verse that says Allah and stop? Why? Because when we say God, God is a name that encompasses, that incorporates so many other wonderful attributes that causes us to know God by descriptions, huh? By his description. But when we say Ar-Rahman, it touches our, all of us know that someone has been kind to us. All of us know that we have got received mercy somewhere along this road, huh? All of us know that. All of us know that we receive mercy from somebody that along this long road that we've been walking or whatever. And all of us know that somebody had to be kind to us in order for us to be here enjoying what we enjoy. Somebody had to be kind to us. I've had individuals tell me, you know, I ain't had nobody treat me right. Ain't nobody ever to treat me right. You know, and I have patience with people like that because I know they met with some people that was so terrible that the experience just obliterated, blotted out, killed, and made them forgetful of everything else that ever happened good. You know, that one experience was so ugly, it just, bam, just shattered everything that ever happened good in that life. So I have patience with them, you know, and I just listen to them until they get tired of telling me all the bad stuff. Then when I see they about ran out of telling me all the bad stuff, then I say, how you get this? I say, that's nice. And I got, I say, where you get that nice, those nice features from? I say, you know, you're a handsome person. You know, I find something. You know, if it's nothing but the looks, I say, you know, you're a handsome person. I say, where you get that? You know? And maybe he's ugly physically. I say, you know, you got a good heart. I say, and then sometimes it's not that, you know, but he's sharp with it. I say, you know, you're a sharp-witted person, you know. I say, where you get that, you know? So you have to start gradually making him conscious that he ain't been mistreated all the time. Somebody must have treated you nice at some turn in the road. Somewhere down the line, you'll treat it nice, you know. And then you can bring it on home to him gradually. Most of them, you can bring it home to him gradually, saying, look, how you here talking to me? A lot of people dead. A lot of people can't talk. They ain't got speech. How you here talking to me? They'll say, well, start counting your blessings. Huh? Yeah, that's why you could tell them. Say, hey, stop counting the misery that you've experienced, chalking up all and keeping a record of all the bad things that happened to you. Start keeping a record of some good that have happened to you, you know. So you have to change them from a pessimist to an optimist, if you can. Yes, so the one verse, Ar-Rahman, just the name of God, have one word, and that is the name of God, Ar-Rahman, the beneficent God. Now, do you know, and this is the evidence of it is in the Quran, that at one point in the Prophet's mission, his followers were so moved and touched by the name Ar-Rahman. And you know, it begins in every chapter begins, Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim, Bismillah Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. So those are the two names opening up every chapter except one. And then those two names come in that chapter that is not opened with those two names. If you read the body of that chapter, you run into it, Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim, in that chapter. So every chapter contains it, and every but one has it in the beginning. Bismillah Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. So the hearing this come from Prophet, Allah revealing this to the Prophet, and they hearing it as he gave it to them, the name Ar-Rahman became so endeared to them that they were calling on God by Ar-Rahman, not Allah. You know, more of them, in the habit of them, would say Ar-Rahman more than say Allah. And the verse came, say, call on God by Ar-Rahman, by Allah, Abba Ar-Rahman, for to God belong all of the most beautiful and most excellent names. So it must have been creating a problem. I'm sure some of the believers are probably saying, look, are we changing from calling God Allah, from calling the Creator Allah, to calling him Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahman? However, when we understand the name Allah, we understand why Allah has remained the most dear name and the richest name for man's intellect when we want to really comprehend or behold the name of God, or the concept of God, that Allah is richest and complete and perfect in holding the concept that man wants to give a name to, Allah, Allah. However, some of these names, especially Ar-Rahman, touch the heart in such a way that it make a believer cry out, Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahman, oh God, oh, ya Ar-Rahman. In fact, you hear him. If you go among Arabic-speaking Muslims in the East, especially during Hajj, and you hear them calling out, Ya Ar-Rahman, Ya Ar-Rahman, Ya Ar-Rahman, oh Ar-Rahman, oh Ar-Rahman, and which is natural and proper and acceptable. He created the man. He created the human being. Now, understand, God is saying the merciful one created the human being. Allah, the merciful one. God himself, the merciful one. The merciful and beneficent one. He's merciful and kind and giving and just serving your needs. He created the human being. That's very important. Understand, this is the third verse. Very short verses. The first one, Ar-Rahman. The second one, Allam al-Qur'an. He taught the man the Qur'an. I taught the Qur'an. And the third one, Khalaq al-Insan. He has created the human being, the man. It is very important. Why? Because the mercy and kindness and benevolence and charity and goodness of God to man touches man in his emotions and in his heart so much that he began to look for that concept or that image as God, you know, the one that will show him the most kindness. He has a tendency to make him his God. The one that he believes is more kind and gentle and loving and serving his needs and everything and just giving him gifts. Oh, that must be God. But who is that? Yes, it is God. But the one that does that is Allah, the Creator. Everything ties back to the Creator. Everything ties back to the Creator. I don't know how many Christians we have here today. We always are happy to have Christians among us. And if they have good, sound faith and healthy faith, we don't want to take that away from them or to shake that or shatter that for them. We'd rather see them hold that than to come over here and be a bad Muslim. So I don't know how many Christians we have here today, but I do know we have a lot of ex-Christians here today. So for that reason, I'm going to say this. The Quran addresses the most important matters in the life of man. The most important matters. And when I say life, I mean the whole thing, history and everything. The most important matters. But at the same time, it touches in the individual, and communicates to the common person. He doesn't have to know anything about the history. He doesn't have to know anything about Christian theology or anything. Allah is speaking directly to his common creature. He touches his heart. He touches his mind. He touches his aspiration. He touches his whole life. His whole life. Everything. Directly. Communicating to him directly. But at the same time, Allah has the ability, the power to communicate to the whole human family while he's addressing the common individual person. So this is addressing, seems like it's not addressing Christian theology, but it is. In Christian theology, they made the mistake of taking the beauty and mercy and kindness and the generosity of Jesus Christ, the prophet, peace be upon him, to be the proof of divinity in him, that he's a God. Because he was so loving in everything. He loved him so much. Oh, he must be God. That must be God. Right now, we have to be careful loving certain spiritual people. A spiritual man, an imam, or a preacher, a minister, a priest, a rabbi. He has to be careful being real kind and loving by because it's a tendency in us to appreciate that so much. We make the mistake of thinking that's God. Because especially in the Western world. In the Western world, man, though he's lifted up high as the image of God, or if they say he has in him the divine spark. Some more confusion. That's all it is. If he got a divine spark in him, it's nothing but a human spark, and it ain't going to go nowhere as a God. It'll go a long ways as a human, but nowhere as a God. See, we don't believe like that, and I think he saved us from that kind of idea. Now, the problem is that this world, the Western world, has made all of us in our nature and in our originality feel bad. But say, man is born in sin. And that all of us just doomed, we just born to be sinners, and we are doomed unless we be saved by the one with the divine in it. In the Christian theology, this one is Jesus Christ, the prophet. And that kind of idea has influenced the way we perceive each other. I would say the concept we have of each other, the attitudes toward each other, our treatment of each other. It has influenced all of that. They say, hell, well, the human being ain't worth nothing anyway, you know? Ain't nothing but a sinner. And those people, many of them who were trying to develop themselves into the divine man in religion, those in the religious schools of thought, they made the mistake of actually believing that if the human person didn't have this divine spark in them, that they were no more than a beast, common animal, and should be treated like animals. Now, we don't want to bring ugly history back, But I'm telling you what I'm saying is history. Actually treated the common people as they call them the common herd. The common herd. The common people are animals. There was a time when you had no rights as we have today. You didn't have any kind of right. The common public or the common masses were treated just like animals. If you didn't have what they thought was the intellectual spark or the divine spark in the intellect, then you were nothing. Not only that, the women too. The women were thought to never be able to have that. Their nature wouldn't allow them to have that. So they were treated just like property. No education for women. And no education for the common public. That lasted for centuries. All right? I'm talking about Western society. This is Western society. And you can go in some places, perhaps even today, in some places where still there are traces of that kind of ignorance and that kind of treatment of common people. And they'll be treated just like animals, just treated just like dumb animals, and worse than animals, because some men are very kind to the animals, depending on whether they like them or not. They treat it like the rejected animal, the kind of animal that they don't want. Treated worse than ordinary animals. Yes. And we know how we were treated when we were first brought to this country. We know how we were treated. So you can see what could happen. Why? Because they believe that the natural man is nothing. The natural man is nothing. He's just a sinner. He's nothing. Until some divine spark come in him or, into him or something. So we must understand what God is saying to us, that he has been most kind to his creatures, most kind to his creatures. And he didn't give this to just some priests or to some monks or rabbis or imams. He gave this to all his creatures. He gave all these things to all of his creatures. So that tells us that he is the same by all of us, and he must have estimated us differently. He must have valued us differently. Because if he didn't, why was he so kind by us that were not born Christians? Why were you so kind by us that were not born Jews? Why was he so kind by us that was not born Muslims? He's been kind by all. Been kind by all. He blessed people with environmental situations that was a paradise for them. Yes. And brought so many riches into their reach and made it possible for them to realize heaven on earth almost. Yes. And they didn't have to be Muslim. They didn't have to be Jew. They didn't have to be Christian. He did it for them. He didn't say, let me first make them a Muslim and do this for them. Let me first make them a Christian and I'll do this for them. No, he did it before they were made Jews, Christians, and Muslims. So you see the wrong in us. Jesus is the Lord, and Jesus is the love. And Allah is love. Allah is the divine love. Allah is the divine mercy. Allah is the loving God. He is the friend. He is the friend that never fails us. We make a big mistake. And the kindness that we credit one man with is no more than the kindness that we will see in many men if we really know history. Ain't no one man but kind like that. Sometime a mother that never gets her name in the news have suffered more than Jesus Christ suffered, according to the gospel. I'm talking about according to the gospel. And don't think I'm not a believer in Jesus Christ. I'm a strong and firm believer in Jesus Christ. Peace be upon the prophet. But I know, too, that there have been people whose name have never gotten into the news, not even to speak about in Scripture or a book, and they have suffered more than Jesus Christ has suffered according to what they say happened to him. They suffered more. Many of Jesus Christ's followers suffered much more than he suffered according to what they report of his suffering. And they didn't break. They still loved preachers. They didn't curse their enemies. They did the same thing. So if that's going to make him God, then there are many of them gods then. See Allah, what Allah is trying to teach the Muslim? That's a big mistake. To not trace everything back to me, the Creator. What is existing out there by itself? Nothing. What started it on its own without Allah? Nothing. I'm just quoting scripture. And this is what makes strong faith. See, when you understand that of Allah, that makes your faith strong. Strong faith. Have a little patience. Won't be too long, I hope. In this religion, we are given the concept, given concepts that protect us from having the truth fragmented and alienated before us. See, man's mistake, misguidance in man's intellect and in his heart many times cause him to think he's right, but he breaks the truth away from itself. And he goes with a part of the truth that looks that attracted him, becomes so fascinating for him, he only takes that one facet. He takes that one little facet of the truth, and he becomes so enchanted by it, so fascinated by it. After a while, he's squabbing down and will go to the gallows, he will go to the fire pit, whatever. This is God. This is God. Say, no, this ain't part truth. This is the whole truth. This is the absolute. And he will go to death saying it. And if he had patience and would accept that maybe he made a mistake, it'll be so easy and simple to show him that what you have ain't nothing but a fragment. You have a small view of the whole. That's why the Quran, Allah in the Quran, treats the subject that is close to the hearts of people, Christians and even Jews, so delicately. But at certain points, the surgeon has to save the life of the creature. And he just cuts. Whole cancer taken out in one stroke. Zoom! You know, the doctor, you go with a bad tooth or something, and he first, good wise doctor, first he act like he ain't even interested in going directly to the tooth. He rubbing you over here. You say, doctor, the pain is here. He knows it. He says, and he said, let's see here. And he mopped the mouth. He started mopping your mouth. You know, you're cleaning my gums. He started mopping the gums. He knows what he's doing. He's making it possible to do what he has to do without you suffering so much, you know. After a while, you ain't feeling too much. He done put something there to kill the pain right on the surface of the gum. And after he takes a needle and he wipes it around real slow. And after, and you have a good one, you didn't even feel the needle go in. And then he gets this stuff. You know now he's getting ready to pull the tooth, right? You know. You can see him. You know what he's doing. But most likely, and most of the time, you don't even feel nothing. But pressure, tooth gone, it's out. But that tooth going to come out. It's going to come out or be filled. Whatever you got to do, you got to do it. At one point in the Quran, Allah brings the truth right to our eyes in a way to let us know, no, I either got to be a Muslim or I just got to give this up. Ain't no room for me holding this wrong belief. Says, what if Allah would will to destroy every creature on earth, including Jesus and his mother, peace be upon them? What is there to prevent God from doing that? Nothing. Nothing. So aren't we stupid then to wish up the one who depends upon the other for his life, for his survival, for his security, even to be resurrected? even to go to from death to the heaven? Wouldn't we be stupid to worship one as a God that's so dependent? You know what struck me, though, and another feature of this religion that's unique for it. This religion communicates to man, and remember what I said, when we say man, we mean humanity, communicates to man by giving first respect to his true self. His true self, the true self of man. To explain what I'm saying, more than any other religion that I know of, this religion communicates to man through man's nature. It addresses man's nature to communicate to him. It addresses man's nature, his natural life, his natural development, his natural aspirations. In communicating to him, it respects man, what he is, what he is essentially, what he has been created essentially to be, or what he is. That's what it addresses. And in doing that, it brings the life into the intellect, life into the mind, into the reasoning of the human being. It brings life into there that wasn't existing when he was blindly following myth, fiction, superstition, false belief, whatever we want to call it. And I used to hear this difference between the prophet Jesus, peace be on him, and the Lord of the heavens and earth. And before I learned the logic of the Quran in dealing with this misconception, I was just partly aware of that logic at that time. Before I could really utilize the great logic of the Quran and the methods of the prophet in dealing with that, it was enough to me, it was convincing enough for me. And I was a young man. I was a minister for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Young man. And I couldn't understand it. I couldn't have patience with certain people that would hold to the idea that there's any God other than Allah. And you know the simple thing about Jesus was enough for me? That he was a baby? That was enough for me. He was a baby. Now, how is something that was a baby can be Allah, can be God? Yeah. You know, I wasn't raised in the church. You know, I wasn't raised in the church. But I was raised with a kind of church way of seeing God. Because I was told, too, that God was a man. That God was Farad Dabir Muhammad in the person. I was told that. So I was given a similar kind of idea, but I was also influenced, as we all were, who were taught by Elijah Muhammad and his ministers, I was influenced to at least try to reason with things. You know, no matter how strange the thing were we were taught, we were told to pick it apart, to reason with it, you know? That everything should be figured out or proven mathematically. So that made me try to pick things apart, you know. I got to make sense out of it. And I would stand up as a minister, and I'm sure I drove many Christians to dislike me. But like some of them liked me, and they became followers of Elijah Muhammad, and they're still around here. Oh, yes, I see them. They're still around here. They saw me when I was a young man on Greenwood, 53rd and Greenwood, preaching over there, and they're still around. Some of them still around. They stood up and they said, "I follow. Yes, I believe in it." After I got through the fire and brimstone. Yes, I couldn't understand. I said, "He was a baby. How can you believe he's a God? He's a baby. If he was a baby, somebody cared for him. He had to come in the world. He's a baby. He came in the world like a baby. He had a mother." That was enough for me, you know. I said, then, here's his own word in the gospel. I read the Bible too, you know. I said, here's his own word in the gospel. He says the sender is not equal the sent is not equal to the sender. The servant is not equal to the master. I say, and still the same gospel says they are three in one, all the same, all equal. This is a contradiction. I say, I like it and understand it when he says the sent is not equal to the sender. And the servant is not equal to the master. And that's where he makes sense to me. And when it says they're all one and the same and equal, then he kills it for me. Yeah, that's what I would tell him, you know, as a minister of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I'm telling you, I thought I was victorious. And I think I was. When you come with common sense against foolishness, and I don't mean this is foolishness, it's not foolishness, but it's deception, it's myth. It's myth and deception. It's erroneous teaching, no matter where it's found. It can be found on the holiest scroll in the history of the planet. It's erroneous teaching, it's deception. And if you come at it with common sense, ain't nobody can stand against you. So what they do, they run backwards, right? The best preacher, the highest one in theology, when you come at him in common sense, he has to back up off of you. He gets a start running back. It's like one I don't say what denomination, because this is a denomination that's been picked on enough. Well, one fellow from one denomination, he invited to fight too. Because he met me when I was cooling down. So, you know, I don't feel sorry for what I did to him. He invited an argument in religion with me. He said, oh, yeah, you're a Muslim, aren't you? I said, yeah. He said, your father's Elijah, right? I said, yeah. So he jumped on me. He said, I'm a minister. I said, yes. He jumped on me. So when I got to throwing at him nothing but common sense, get behind me, Satan. So I was a young man even at that time. Yeah, I don't think I was, I was in my early 30s. So get behind me, Satan. So I told him, I said, where are you coming from in the Bible? I say, I say, as another part that say, that the real believers will make Satan flee from them. You're supposed to put Satan to flight. If I'm Satan, I'm supposed to be running from you. If you really got something. Get behind me, Satan. Isn't that something? Isn't that some kind of expression? Get behind me, Satan. What do you mean? You gonna lead me? Get behind me, Satan. If I'm Satan, he gonna lead me or something? Get behind me. What do you mean? Hide. Hide. I don't want to see what you got. And I call you Satan if I say anything about you, but just get that out of my face. I can't stand it anymore. Yeah, that common sense logic, man, it puts some pressure on them, and they have to run or start just ranting at the mouth or falsely accusing you of something. It go apart. Just go come apart. And those really high up in the knowledge, some of them just become silent. So they were told not to risk the ark. Not to risk the ark. Of the covenant in the battlefield. But they say they did that once and lost the ark. It's the Bible. This is Bible, no kidding. Yeah, the Jews, not the Christians, the Jews. The Bible says that once they fought the people, they brought the ark out into the battlefield, you know. The Ark of the Covenant. They brought it into the battlefield and ended up losing it to the opponents. So they were told never to come out with the Ark of the Covenant again. don't risk it in battle. So that's how those real wise boys, they don't risk the heavy stuff in no battle, you know. You get the you start getting the battle hot and heavy for them, they just go silent. They ain't saying nothing. Well, I guess that's wise. You know, the Arabs have a saying, either kana kalamu min fitbatin fastakutu min dhahab. If speech is made of silver, then silence is made of gold. That's old Arab saying, you know. And many of the proverbs in the Bible come from Arab saying. Their wisdom from Arabs. I mean, history, Christian Bible history will tell you that. It's actually an Arab wisdom that has been preserved under the title Proverbs. Not all of it, but a lot of it.